everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today's Real Talk is with a real leader who is an absolute legend in pro sports marketing and sports marketing in general. He is literally one of the best leaders, humans, I think, that exists and who had such an impact on my journey. So Fred Mangione, I call him Freddie. Freddie, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Shauna, how are you? It's so great to see you.
So folks, to give you context, I always give you context to the guests on the show. Freddie and I spent years together, 7.5, I think, something like that, at the Nets, at the New Jersey Nets at the time. Talk about being in the trenches together. Freddie was my rock, my leader. And I don't have a lot of regrets, but the one regret I have in my career is walking away from Freddie as a leader. So I've wanted him on the show for a long time. Had to chase him down. One of the busiest guys in the business. And so, Fred, we're going to jump right into your evolution, because where you're at right now, you were most recently with the Jets. Before that, with the Brooklyn Nets. We were in Newark for a little while, New Jersey Nets.
New Jersey.
And I think, like, from my perspective, your evolution of your career is so remarkable. Because as I remember, it's like you started out in ticket sales and then just exploded your career, really, as ticket sales, marketing, leader, everything. So I'm not even doing you justice, but give us an idea of your evolution and what you're up to today.
Well, look, I appreciate it, Shauna, and it's so great to see you. And as I say, when you have good teammates, no matter what the title is or the office you're in, you know, you learn from each other. And there were many days you walked in my office and kicked my butt in and told me, we got to do this, we got to do that. And I'd be like, Shauna, you're right. So, you know, I appreciate for all you've done for me in the marketing end. But look, I was a kid coming out of college years and years ago. I don't want to age myself, but, you know, wanted to get into sports, but didn't break in for a while, and got into the pharmaceutical business for a little bit. And I was done with my training and just about to start working at Pfizer. Got a call if I wanted to sell tickets for $5 an hour and 10% commission at the Meadowlands for a minor league roller hockey team, not even an ice hockey team, a roller hockey team, and an arena football team. So my mom, who I lost at a young age, looked at me and said, I think you're nuts, but if you want to do this, do it while you're young and go chase it. And 28 years later, I'm still sitting in this crazy business, you know, through a lot of different streams and meeting a lot of great people. So, you know, I did the minor league stuff for 5 years, and probably one of the best things I have. Again, I'm going to age myself here, but I was called to run the Women's World Cup in 99 here at Giant Stadium. And at the time, women's sports wasn't near what it was today. This is, you know, you're talking Mia Hamm, Julie Foudy, Brandi Chastain, these global icons who were just getting going. And I had the task of marketing and selling out Giant Stadium. And candidly, people laughed at me, but we were on ABC Sports Channel 7 here locally. I flew out to LA 3 times to interview. And the woman who was running the event, who I still talk to today, Marla Messing, who I think the world of, looked at me and said, can we sell out Giant Stadium? I'm like, we will sell this out. They were ready to tarp the top. They were ready to downsize it. And we just put some programs together. And it was one of the top attended events in Giant Stadium history. So I've always been proud of that and what we did, because we literally built it from scratch. And I think that then helped me go on. You know, after that, I was offered a job with the Boston Red Sox and a couple other things. And, you know, again, my mom passed away at a young age, so I ended up staying local. And a gentleman who I knew through the years called me from the Nets and said, I heard you're available. You know, do you want to come help me restructure my sales department? And I told him, I will, but I just want to be upfront. I'll probably take this job for about a year, maybe 2 max. And I have other things I want to tackle. And 18 years later, to your point, 3 buildings later, 3 owners later, 3 CEOs later, 2 logos later, you name it. And a whole plethora of, unfortunately, some up and down basketball. We ended up in Brooklyn. So everyone knows the story of Brooklyn. And I was just afforded a great opportunity to rebrand and develop logos and sit in a room with Jay-Z and you name it, just things that a kid growing up with a single mom in northern New Jersey and western New Jersey that had his in Jefferson Township would have never thought in his wildest dreams. So the game and the industry has taken me to many places, from Russia to China to London multiple times. So I've been beyond lucky. But, you know, we then, when I was in Brooklyn, I was able to really elevate ultimately up to the COO position, and where the ownership group at the time, Mr. Prokhorov, turned around and said, we want more, we want to build more. So we went out and bought the Nassau Coliseum. We went out and bought Webster Hall. We went out and opened offices in LA. So we expanded pretty quickly. And then at the time, ironically, just when we thought everything settled down, my boss walked in and said, hey, we're going to go get the New York Islanders and I want you to run it. So I picked up a hockey team along the way. So I've been fortunate enough to work three of the four majors. But as I always say, I'm man enough to tell everyone I can never work in baseball. But after doing all that and bringing the Islanders over, I just felt it was time to pass the baton. I had a yearning to get in the NFL. I knew the president of the Jets pretty good at the time, Neil Glatt, who became a friend over the years. And, you know, we got into talking and he said, if you're ever ready to make the jump, a lot of people never thought I would. I had an affinity for the brand, for the Jets. So went over there, was able to restructure some things there, and not knowing they actually relaunched a new uniform. So I didn't think I was ever going to have to go through that again. Lucky enough, most of the hard work was done and it was just more about launching it and getting out there with it. But it was taking the Nets, which was rebuilding a brand, and then the Jets, it was a little different because it was, you know, just paying homage to this historic brand. So I was very lucky to do that and be able to look at these two brands. So, you know, I did that for 6 years and, you know, I just got to the point where I was like, I don't know if this team stuff's for me after 28 years. So, I'm taking a little time now, but along the way, I've been doing a lot of consulting in the NHL space, the MLS space, the ticketing space, the digital marketing space. I'm doing some work for a Power Five conference in the collegiate space. So I've been pretty active as I figure out what's next, but it's kept me sharp. And, you know, it's all been through relationships and how we get in this industry and, you know, still talking to great people like yourself. So I've been able to, you know, stay busy, but more importantly, keep dealing with good people. And it's very cliche-ish, as everyone says, but this industry especially, because you spend more time with your colleagues than you do with your family sometimes. And, you know, so it's very, very important to line yourself up with good people.
Yeah, it's so true. Folks, as Freddie was talking, I'm like kind of laughing at various parts because I'm remembering the crazy shit that happened. When you said like ups and downs of basketball, I remember the year when I think we might have won one game all season. It might have been a preseason game.
We started 0-18. And we were on the cover of Sports
Illustrated.
We were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And, you know, I remember everyone going out after we won one game, like we just, you know, made it to the playoffs. But that's where, and I go by the mantra, control what you could control.
Yeah,
so I've told every staff I've worked for, you know, when a ball went up every year, when a puck dropped, especially in football and in this New York market, because it's a football market. I said, once that ball gets kicked off, we're done. No one's listening to the sales and marketing staff anymore. So you got to take advantage and just tell the story and the product, treat people right, treat your customers right. And, you know, we didn't have the luxury of Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant at the time. So, but, you know, I take solace that, and, you know, I still talk to Sean Marks here and there. He says, if you guys didn't build this platform, these guys wouldn't be here. So you know, the crew that opened up that arena, we thank you for it. And he's always very respectful, and I joke around, I think the biggest compliment I ever got in my career was from Billy King. He walked in my office one day and said, you guys built this brand and this arena up to be the biggest thing in the world, that I got to hope this team could keep up with you guys. And but I said, we're all in it together. And we were. And, you know, when the business side and the product side could come together and you know each other's pain, you're in it together. And it makes for a great relationship. We're like that at the Jets, too. There's not a better person in this industry than Joe Douglas. And, you know, he would walk in my office all the time, like, what can we do? I want to win more games. I want to do this. And, you know, he gets it. And those are the people you want to be in a foxhole with.
Yeah, absolutely. And such a great point, you know, that whole like foxhole in the trenches, you and I use, you know, we've talked about that a lot. And I love what you said. And I have to say, like, There are some, I talk about you so often because I quote you so often throughout my own journey and my own leadership efforts. And the two things that I quote people that quote you on is what you said is control what you can control. I remember so many times walking into your office, like freaking out about whatever the thing was. It was like, Shauna, control what you could, can you control that? And so we could, you know, we could. And then the other thing though, that's very related is we can get through anything together. And I can't tell you how many times I use that exact thing because whether it was me getting 3 million pocket schedules printed with the wrong date on it, I did that, folks. Or when I got the billboard printed and forgot to put any like URL or phone number or anything on it. I mean, stupid shit that but I remember again, it was like, I'd come in like it was the end of the world, and you would look at me and say, we'll get through anything together. Now, those are just little examples, but you know, when you're coming up, you could have been very different as a leader. You could have come down on me and threatened my job and everything, but you're so right. The way you have always approached work is like to really invest in the people, and to, if you're in the trenches together, you work through anything together.
People ask me all the time whether it's, getting on a podcast like this or talk, what's your best highlight in your career? And yeah, of course, opening up Barclays and reinventing a brand and, doing some great things at the Jets and the Women's World Cup. Like I can name it, but I get back and it's just the people now who've started with me, like yourself, and have grown on. I mean, I've had people who've, old colleagues who won 40 under 40, and they're like, I'm thinking about you tonight. If I didn't, the tie you gave me once, I'm wearing tonight, the cufflinks you gave me, like just stuff like that and notes I still get. During a pandemic, a couple people sent me cards just going, I'm thinking about you and your family, and like out of nowhere, and people who I haven't even talked to for a while. And that's the stuff when people check in with you and, through the good and the bad. Like it's easy to be everyone's teammate when you're winning, 10 games in the NFL or going to playoffs in the NBA or doing whatever in the NHL. It's easy to be teammates, but it's the tough times. And I feel like I probably talk to the people who were with me the tough times than, like, look, we were lucky enough to go to the finals twice, right? With the Nets, and we blinked and we were sitting there playing Shaq and Kobe going, oh my God, this is the most amazing job in the world. And then 2 years later, we were winning 10 games. Like, that's how quick it goes. And I just don't think, unfortunately, it goes so fast and it's so hard on you. This industry is so taxing that people literally, it's again, it's another cliche, but people just don't have fun with it. I joke around all the time. When I left Brooklyn and I started working at the Jets, and I was close to home and everything, I'd have people call me up, be like, what's it like? Like, oh my God. And I'm like, I'm not riding my bike to work every day and in the back, field having to catch with Sam Darnold. Like, it's a job, and it's still hard at the NFL, and it's harder because it's at a bigger level. The stakes are a lot higher. So it's all relative, but again, it's about the people you're with and who wants to be in a foxhole with you. And it is, it's about life lessons. I just think you talk about the pocket schedule. Yeah, it seemed like the end of the world. And I'm sure I never told you, but I'm sure I got the lashing for it. But it never
Oh, you
made
definitely
sense
did.
to go down, if you know what I mean. I never believed in getting it from the owner to the CEO to me to any, like, it's a life. Let's fix it. Let's put things in place that'll make us better so it won't happen again. Because it's going to happen again. Something's going to fall. And it's no one's fault. You move quick, you move fast, and you're trying to be perfect. And no one's ever going to be perfect. So it's just, you just try to minimize the amount of mistakes, not try to not make any, because it's just impossible to do in the industry.
It's so true. And I'm so glad you brought those things up because I think those are really great markers of how what I got from you and how you lead, which is to take hits for people sometimes. When you're in a leadership position, trust me, I've had other people who like point the finger at you or they just, you know, blow you up. And I know there were plenty of times when you took hits for me or other people. When you said those things to me, you were like, and I and literally, I remember what we did. We had a process that we put in place afterward, and that I have used that process with other things, you know. But again, it's like it's so important because I also think that from that, I learned so much from you as a leader, right? How I wanted to emulate those things. But also, the way you had treated me in that moment actually had a profound impact on my ability to be resilient and keep going and actually perform better. So, I think again, like for those who you are listening, these are really important moments. It's like, if everything's great, that's one thing, but how you act as a leader in those moments where the shit is hitting the fan is, has such impact.
Yeah, well, as I always said, putting chaos on top of chaos never
Oh.
makes the world better. And look, it doesn't matter whether you're in the NBA, NHL, NFL. These owners are kind of all the same, and they have expectations. But most of them, at the end of the day, they don't really understand the industry, so that makes it a little bit harder as well. So, as you get to certain levels and you interact with them, you want to explain things, but you want to keep it at a high level. But at the same point with your staff, you want to have the devil in the details and make sure you're dialing down with everything so it doesn't bubble up to a high level, meaning, certain mistakes or whatever. And look, I've always been told I don't micromanage, but yet people would be like, Freddie, you're in the weeds too much. Don't. And I'm like, it's not because I'm micromanage. I just want to make sure I'm helping. And as I always said, wherever I've been, whether it was you and I, Shauna, or my marketing guy at the Jets, Tim Kemp, or whoever it might have been, I always said, I want to be on the same page with you. So if my boss asks you a question, you're going to know how I'm going to answer, vice versa. And that's how I managed at the Jets. That's how I managed at the Nets. That's how I managed in Brooklyn when you left. And that's how, because it's all communication, and the communication starts internally before. I always joke around, everyone looks at me crazy, and I could be, but I go, having the communication within the four walls is the first step. We're all worried about the marketing message and what we're telling the public and the PR message and this. But I go, if we're all not aligned within the four walls, doesn't matter what you say, that's where the chaos starts, because then the message going out isn't in lockstep. And that's when trouble hits. And again, whether you're winning 10 games, no games, whatever, I just feel like you want to be buttoned up as much as possible. Because it's easy for all of us to say the team's terrible, the team's this. And I've told people, unfortunately, it may just be my MO in the market. I've worked for a lot of bad teams, unfortunately. But I always have the running joke, I'm not wearing any rings, and I only got one on. And depending on the day of the week, my wife will tell me if I could keep it on or off, so when she's mad at me. But you persevere, you go through, and you just work every day to get better. And my thing was always about the staff. And candidly, some people I work for didn't always believe what my philosophies, like, all right, yeah, the staff's fine, but whatever. But I was always, I always just felt responsible and wanted to make sure everyone knew how I was. And I talked to everyone, all the time. It's important to know everyone's names and the whole organization and departments, whether you're working with me or not, and basketball and football. I just feel that stuff's important. Because not everyone gets to talk to leaders in the organization. And I know talking to Fred doesn't mean anything, but just getting a casual hello from someone, even down to an intern, you'd be amazed how far that goes. You'd be amazed.
I mean, I know what I'm so glad you brought up the point too about communication because that's really where I learned to, that thing exactly what you said about being the same page. Like, that's where I learned my infamous like Shauna emails, where it's like you just had it all laid out so that you were never caught off guard. You knew how to talk about different things that were going on. And the amount that you trusted me at that time was huge. But I think it was like, again, like those things that you did at the time, I didn't necessarily, I didn't know. I was just learning from you. But I think, again, I'm pointing these things out because as people are listening, that communication is so key. It's not just you as a leader talking at people, but it is that exchange and it is that concept of being on the same page. And as busy as you are, as busy as you have always been, Freddie, you make yourself present for people. And I think, again, like that is a marker of someone who is developing people, making an impact. And it, again, like you're saying, it's all about the people, it's all about those relationships you build and the trust you build together. Because I was fighting every day to be better for us, for you, for you know what I mean? And quite frankly, sometimes you forget about the product on the court because you're so bonded together to make it move forward.
And it's funny, when I was going through the when I was going through the process, when I was first thinking about going to the Jets, I remember I was going through, and when it was all over, I had an executive who's a colleague of mine, walk in my office and tell me, he told me two things. One, I did a presentation, and I literally put everyone's names who I knew was going to be in the meeting on their own presentation. So I literally like set up the room, like it was a sales call. Like, that's how I was taught. That's how, and I remember someone saying to me, like, the old, you know, you had to set hello, like, you had to set the name. Like, this one gentleman joked around me, but he said to me, you were the only person in the presentation. And it was just someone who was in the room, part of the process. I think he probably had a vote, but he didn't have the vote. He said, you were the only person that if everyone we saw, and we saw a lot of people who talked about career development for their staff. Oh, wow. And that kind of like, and again, whether right or wrong, whether I spend too much, but I just, as I get older in this career and one day I got my toes in the sand and I'm able to really retire, I just want to look back at people I've been able to look. It's a young person's business. I'm really getting old now because I got, you know, my kids who have friends and older friends who are in college going, can I meet you for coffee, Mr. Mangione, and teach you? So I just feel like you want to, and I do that. My wife always says, like, it's amazing you always take, but I feel like it's important. I feel like I know I never had that as a kid. And coming from a divorced family, I came from a divorced family and I lost both my parents at a very, very young age. And I had to do everything on my own. And I can't get a, 30 people jobs in my town who are, going to school for sports management. But if I could send a resume or do anything just to help this much, I just feel like that kind of stuff's important. It would have meant the world to me if I had it, but I was just thrown out there. And, some people are luckier than others, but I just feel like if you do right by people, it's important, and people just need an opportunity and a chance, because in this industry, as we all know, especially now with LinkedIn, and everything else, like I used to joke around at the Jets, I just had piles and piles of resumes all over my office. And, everyone wants to get in this business, but it's also not for everyone. No. And then when a pandemic hit and these young kids are like, Freddie, I'm just going to work from home all the time. It's great working for you, but I'm, and they're working for digital agencies or whatever, because they're just sitting in their apartments in Hoboken, which is great, but the mentality's changed. The tenure of people have changed, people's career motives have changed. They want to make a lot of money quick and they don't want to work that hard, which is fine. And God bless them if they can. But I think there is a balance. I think the pandemic taught us all a lot. Look, I was in the office every day at 7:30, and people would be like, well, why are you in here every day this early? Like again, and it like, yeah, I was working, but you know what it was? The everyday employee would come in and just start BSing with me. And it was that, not being on time. Hey, did you see the game last night? Or just, and a lot of time it'd be young salespeople who maybe during the day, would kind of come by my office, but they know once I got going, it was crazy and they didn't. But I'd have that time where I was just talking about my kid's basketball game or what else was going on, or, and that's the connection time and the important time where you really connect with your employees and do things like that. So it's important to try to do it. And you're not going to hit everyone, but just making laps and popping in offices, or even just seeing a young sales staff being like, what do you guys need? Like, it just goes a long way. It goes a long way.
Yeah. It goes such a long way. And the whole part of like the lifestyle, and I want to talk about, which is, working in this industry is not a job. It is a lifestyle. And, I lived it for 13 years. You lived it far longer than I did. Are living it. And I mean, I want to actually get a bit from you about, like, have you been able to maintain, how you've been able to, because those are long days and you're in the NBA, what are there, 44 games a year, not including your playoffs, including preseason, that's a long run. And, again, you were at the office, whether it was a game day or not, back in the, in the NBA family, 7:30 in the morning till after the game at night, and all the time. And yet you mentioned your wife, and I never met her in person, but I know her name is Jen, because it was like, again, other people who I think I could consider in, at that very level that you were, it's like, you never heard about their family, definitely didn't hear about their wives. You're like, do they even exist? But it was always, it seemed like you always were able to find some sort of balance, or at least be able to maintain that priority. And so I'd love for you to like talk about that a bit, because whether it's people are like, they get to learn about that, or maybe someone's listening who they're trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Look, it is hard. And there were times my wife would be like, go live in Brooklyn and, and stay there for the week. And just, when I was in Jersey, it was different. My kids, probably my daughter, who's now a freshman in college, she probably, I don't want to say affected, but she lived through it the most, because, you know, as she was growing up. When she was young and the kids were really young, I was here in Jersey, but I was, you know, again, to your point, what people forget, you know, I joke around the NFL all the time, when you're sitting there on Thanksgiving with your family and you're watching those games all day, you know what? Someone's working them and they're not with their family. Our first couple years in Brooklyn, we played Christmas Day. I was waking up, opening up gifts in a suit and running out the door to get to Brooklyn to go run a game. And like, you're giving that up. So for me, I'm not going to proclaim I got it. I had it down because I didn't, you know, there were days you got it. There were days you weren't. What really hit us, you know, it was tough. Like when we were opening up the building, like my wife always said to me, like, that was hard. And she wasn't talking about my job. She was talking about hers. And because it is a job, and my kids were like knee deep in it at the time, meaning like they needed, you know, they weren't self-sufficient the way they are today, obviously as teenagers. But, and it really hit me, as much as my wife would talk about, like, you got to be, and I felt like I was, but I just didn't want to be that dad coming in on a game on two wheels on my car, you know, like, but I was in Brooklyn and I didn't want to move my kids. I commuted to Brooklyn for 7 years. I'd be on George Washington Bridge by, you know, 6:30 every day. So, but there had to be days where you just said, I'm done and I'm going through. So that's one of the reasons when a jet opportunity comes up, I never forget, I ran into a friend in town and they're like, am I seeing you? Not only are you coaching your son's travel team, but you're coaching his rec team and this team. I'm like, I got some catching up to do. So, you know, so for my son, I kind of dove into it, you know, head on to kind of to that point to catch up on life a little bit. But, you know, when my wife would tell me, my daughter would wake up on a Monday and be like, what nights is dad home this week? Because, you know, look, we went from renting a building here at the Meadowlands to now running one. So even when I wasn't in that building, my phone rang all night. Operations, this, that, the ice. So there isn't a magic plan. You just really need to try to set yourself up each week to be like, here's what I have. Here's what I'm going to do. You got to make sure you take vacations. You got to make sure you do this. But the arena business is very, very hard. You know, God bless. And we have a lot of them. We have a lot of friends who've come and gone, but God bless anyone who works at Madison Square Garden. I mean, we were a very active building in Brooklyn and, you know, everyone, and I got a lot of friends there who it doesn't stop. So to say I have even at the Jets, everyone's like, oh, it's great. You only have 10 games, but it's still a lot. You know, I was traveling an okay amount, but like, you know, you got to make sure you go see clients, you know, you're out, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're going to the Super Bowl. That must be, but you're there for a week and it's all day, every day, seeing people going places. And, you know, it's a lot. So you give it up, but you just got to figure out what does work. But I do always joke around, as much as my wife would be like, can you work from home a little bit? And that was like back in the day, like, work from home. Then once COVID hit, she goes, I begged you for 10 years to work from home after COVID. I never want you to work from home again. So, you know, because I would just be on the phone all day. And I mean, that was just tough because I just had people work for me crying. Am I going to lose my job? My wife and husband lost their job. And when you talk about really diving in, and I talked to anyone who wanted to call me. It didn't matter if they had other boss. I'm like, call me. And it was one of those things where you gave, if you guys need anything, call me. And you get off of Zoom one day and everyone starts calling. You're like, uh-oh, you know, and I literally had my assistant at the time. Like I was setting up one-on-ones with anyone who wanted to talk to me because we were all just going through, you know, look, Sean, you know, we went through 9/11 at the Nets. I went Superstorm Sandy, held up Brooklyn opening up. I mean, the first Nets game got canceled because, you know, we worked on a building for 10 years and we had to cancel it because the subways were flooded and this and that. So when COVID hit, I kind of just got on the phone. I'm like, hey, we'll get to it. You know, I've navigated 9/11. We've done this. Like, I get it. Like, and all of a sudden, like, I didn't get it because those other things were locally. This was a national issue that was, you know, and obviously it was not more devastating than 9/11, but this was a national issue where people were losing jobs, money by the day. And I told everyone, I go, my number one job is everyone on this call keeping their job. So do what you need to do every day. And, you know, we were very lucky because our president at the Jets did all he could to keep everyone's jobs. But some of the people who said, I don't know if I can hang in there, I was working the phones and I probably got four of them jobs somewhere else to say, if you can't hang in at the Jets, like, let me help you do something else because we didn't have fans. So, you know, if there's no fans, there's no revenue. And there's no revenue, there's no bonuses. So you may have your job, but you don't have everything else that comes with it. And I said, let me help you somewhere else. And I was literally on the phone just helping place people who just said, maybe this sports thing isn't for me. I can't just quit. And I wasn't just going to keep paying them. So I helped them do other things and just try the best you can. But there's never a magic answer in this industry. And everyone's just got to handle situations differently, whether it's your family and the infamous work-life balance. You know, the infamous Brett Yarmark would always say, everyone, you know, he would say work-life blend, you know, and, you know, how do you just get your family to blend in with, you know, but, and it's always great to have your family at games and stuff, but they also don't want to be there every night either. So, so it's tough. It's tough.
It is. But folks, I want to pause for a second because you said something in there, Fred, when you were talking, which is your number one job during that moment of crisis was to help keep everybody keep their jobs. And folks, like, that is the dedication that Fred has as a leader to the people. And I mean, if that's not leadership, I don't know what is, you know, and the way that you, that's that element I always got from you of like putting people first, and that, you know, it was like, that's what really mattered. And I mean, and your people work like their asses off for you, you know, when you can lead that way. And I'll say, like, look at the people who have come, who were, you know, you were privileged to have you as a leader. You got Matt Pizarris leading at the Bucks, Joe Stetson leading at the Red Bulls, Laura Lefton leading in the NFL. Like, it's amazing.
Dan Lefton, Brian Baslow, I mean, James Caparo at Boston College, you know.
Capra, you know, I just talked to him the other day.
Yeah. And, you know, guys like Capra, you know, Brian Baslow, who went off and you always knew they wanted to be. I mean, I remember Pat Capra walking in my office like, yeah, I'm going to start my own agency. I'm going to do this. And he's young. 20, and I used to always joke around because I knew whenever he had a Gatorade in his hand, it was a good night in Hoboken the night before. And I just want to make sure you weren't out too much last night before you quit this job. And but they were all smart. They all knew it. And again, the biggest compliment I get from any of those guys, they're presidents now. They're doing amazing things. They all call me still. Thanks. Appreciate it. I still use some Freddie-isms there. And that to me is the most important thing for me. And not my career, what I've done, but just what I've done for people. That's the most important thing. And now I have, you know, there's a young core of up and comers at the Jets, and there's some people there who I worked with are going to do some amazing things in this industry. And you know, and that's what's important. And when you hear from those people and talk to them, and I just want to help people continue to get better. Cause as I've joked around, I joke to you and everyone else, you know, I'm going to work for someone else someday. You know, I look at Andrew Schwartz at Howard Hughes, what he's doing out there. You know, he was running all the Islanders business for me in Brooklyn. And he turned around one day and said, you know, yeah, I'm going to go run this industry. And I'm like, what do you know about it? And he knows everything about it now, and he's killing it. Yeah. And Mike Savatsky. I mean, we can go on and on. And, you know, I've just been lucky to be attached with some great people.
Well, I think we've all been pretty lucky to be attached to you, Fred. You know, I think it's pretty awesome. And it is awesome, like you're saying, is those people who have, you know, been with you to see them as they're going. And I will say, like, you and I have maintained contact over the years, and I always knew that, like, we were present for each other, but didn't talk all the time. So through the years, through the miles, and you always pop up at, you know, times if I like announce something, there you go again. And so, you know, I think, again, for people who are listening, I think these bonds that we make with people as we're going through the journey and we're coaching and we're leading people, it doesn't always have to be the constant conversations, but it's that lasting relationship over time where you know that person's there for you. You know, so what I actually want to get to, you talked a bit about helping people find jobs. And I will say, I was talking to Elisa Padilla the other day, who's a friend of both of ours and an amazing woman. And she was talking about, you have this incredible ability to like thread the needle and help people find roles. And she actually used John Beyer as an example, who was leading with you in ticket sales. And she shared with me that you had helped open a door. Now he is leading in a tech security company.
Tech security. So he works for a company called Evolve, which is just going to take over the industry. And again, it's a relationship. You know, my old boss at the Jets, Neil Glatt, is a board member of the company. And he goes, and he always jokes around me. He goes, who's a good salesperson leader who thinks sports from the Man Jones tree? Do you have anyone? And I'm like, I have someone. I knew right away, just. And so I called John, and it's funny. And he used to call me Big Man as a joke. He goes, Big Man, you want me to go be a security guy? Like, you kind of didn't. And he goes, and he goes, and he goes. Now, all of a sudden, I had breakfast with him last week. He goes, it's literally our philosophies at the team level, bringing it to this side of the industry, where instead of security people going in trying to sell this, you talk about sponsorship, you talk about announcements, you know, him being involved with all the PR we've done in the past. And he just said, I blended that together. And he's now involved where he says, here's how we should maybe look at market it. Here's how we should, you know, same thing. Takes how we grew up in the business, comes to the interview, has a presentation, says, here's what I think we can do. But then he's using all his connections through, you know, whether it's connections he knows at the NFL through me or Laura or other people. He's then going to, you know, Joe and going to people at the MLS. We got people at Major League Baseball, you know, the Tony Brazilis of the world, who's another one who you know, I found, you know, taking tarps out at the Somerset Patriots game. And he's now running baseball academies and everything for, you know, he was working directly for, you know, with Derek Jeter for a while. Like, so, but now he's just using the infrastructure of everyone we know. He knows all these GMs from being at Barclays, and he's just calling them up saying, let me get in. Some of the work I'm doing with some of the brands I'm doing, I'm like, let me get you some connects. So, and look, even as I've been navigating doing the number one thing people are asking me when doing some of this consulting, like, hey, I got some open positions. Can you help me? And I was like, I've placed four people, recently who've, you know, unfortunately there was the garden went through another transition. There were some really, really good people. Two in particular, one of them worked for me forever. And I just called around and I'm like, you need to hire this person. And this one place hired him like within a week and just said, he's in. So so me and Leo Erlein always joked around because we'd always get called and we're like, maybe one day, because everyone calls us for jobs or for ticket hookups. So maybe we can open up like a recruiting ticket company, you know, like and do something, you know, bring the two brands together. So we always joke around about that. But yeah, look, I hate to say it, the day of just calling someone and, you know, putting your resume up, and it happens once in a blue moon, cause I have heard it, and applying on LinkedIn or this, but it's all who you know, unfortunately, especially in this industry. So again, if I could forward a resume or do anything, I feel like I'm constantly doing that to the point where it literally was always a job for me. But I just, you know, when people call me, they're like, I got this job. Like, someone took the call because they said they knew you. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Because someday I'm going to ask for their favor return. So I'm still waiting for that day to come. But no, it's all good. And look, hiring good people is also hard. I think a lot of people take my call when I'm like, hey, you should look at this person. Because, you know, as many jobs that are out there, like, it's hard finding good people these days, because not everyone wants to work the hours in this industry. Not as many people are passionate. So if you're like, this person has done this and they were with me, it just helps to give some people a leg up.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, folks, as you're hearing this, I mean, like, that generosity, I think, of the time, that investment, you know, and at the end of the day, sometimes it's like, there's something that you can hold your head up and know that you have positively impacted so many people's journeys. And it's also kind of fun to be like, oh yeah, I got a guy, I got a gal, you know, and like, you can, it's so magical when you can see it happen. And I think you're right. Like, there's something to say when you're like, no, trust me, I know this person. And also, you know, and speaking to like, what do you look for in people? Sometimes it's like that person who, you know, that chaos can be erupting and that person can stay calm and find their way through it together. So.
Well, it's funny. I'll put like a lot of youth or friends of whose kids or people hit me up on a younger side or maybe, and I'll say, you know what we're going to do? Cause I also want to challenge them a little bit. I go, if you really want me to help you, instead of just saying, I'm going to call this person or that person, I'm like, when you're home, I want you to go through my LinkedIn page. And I want you to just see who in my, now I know there's a lot of people and there's a lot, but I'm like, go through it. And if there's someone you think would make sense for you, let me know. And if it's someone, because sometimes it's an easy one, like yourself or this one or that one. And other times it's like, oh, just a friend or whatever. But like, if someone then goes through that process to me, I'm like, okay, they really want to. When someone's like, okay, I've had a lot of people where they just thought like, oh, you're not just going to call the guy, you know, with the devils or here. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, why don't you tell me what you're looking for? Give me your goals, what area of the business, what area. And if then you have it come together, then I will do it for you. So I also want to make sure, especially with kids on the younger side trying to break in, that it's not just going to get handed to you and, you know, go through some of the process to get it. But there's such an edge with kids today between the LinkedIns and the Twitter. Like, we didn't, you know, I tell people, I'm like, I barely had email when I was applying for jobs. So, you know, that's how far I go back, and people laugh. I'm like, you know, I still have all my rejection letters from, you know, the Yankees and this one and that one when I got out of school. And I'm like, I'm going to work in sports and send George Steinbrenner, a baseball, my resume on it. And I thought I was cool. And I got rejection letters mailed to me like 2 weeks later. And, you know, I still got them saved in a, you know, in a box. But, you know, that's what you remember. But and you got to go through the process. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's so funny. I know it was before email and the LinkedIn and all that. I remember my version that was literally flying myself to New York City and meeting people in the NBA where I was like, I got to get in here. So, well, you are such a busy guy, so I want to kind of wrap this up here. I've got two things, if we can squeeze it in. And one is, we've talked a lot about what you've seen, a bit about what you're seeing now. Is there anything that you think is going to be like next? Any, like, almost call it like a prediction, so to say, kind of from the momentum of the way you've seen things moving?
You know, look, I think, when you look at the, you know, obviously the NIL stuff in college has gotten really interesting. So that's going to be something to keep your eye on. You know, this gaming space, as it opened, obviously it's taken over the world. I still remember being at an NBA meeting once, and it's had to be a good 10 years ago. And Adam Silver's like, I want fans to be at a game where they're going to pick up their phone and they're going to place a bet whether Steph Curry hits a free throw or not. And I remember looking at a colleague going, Adam's unbelievable, but he's out of his mind. And he wasn't out of his mind. It was there. Yeah. I think the digital streaming and the, you know, the ability to get content when you want, how you want.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you see how the NFL did it this year when they created the NFL Plus. So, you know, you buy in a little bit more just to get it, you know. Dallas Cowboys is a huge brand, and they're all, you know, they have fans all over the world. So they want to buy in just for that instead of DirecTV. You know, NBA now is doing where you can just buy the last couple minutes. So I think that's going to keep evolving in the way some of these, you know, these leagues, whether it's NFL with Amazon, and how you would think that's never going to happen. The MLS Apple deal is going to be very interesting for a league that's making so much strides, but now they're saying, you like the league, you got to pay for it. Season ticket holders get it, but they may not have that just going around the channel all of a sudden seeing a Red Bull game on or someone where you're like, oh, let me check this out a little bit. So that'll be interesting. And, you know, what's going to happen with the NBA and TNT and Turner is going to be another one. So I think the TV, the content, getting it when you want, how you want. Again, I got a 15-year-old son who, you know, plays hoops every day in and out. Won't sit there and watch a game with me because he'll just grab it on his phone and get a couple highlights when he's ready to do it. You know, same thing with the NFL. He's, you know, he'll watch some games with me, but it's more about his fantasy team. And so really getting to that younger fan through that, and you see teams doing a lot more on TikTok and delivering more content. I mean, they always say content is king, and I felt like that was just like a tagline forever, but it's finally gotten there. Yeah. And, that's getting your marketing. But as I also say, I think that's eventually going to really change the ticketing landscape, because I always felt a challenging thing in the NFL, even though there's nothing more powerful than the NFL. There's no other league that tells you to get DirecTV and get this and watch in your man cave. I feel like they promote more to sit at home and watch the game on your 72-inch than they actually promote to go. So it makes for an interesting dynamic. And coming out of COVID, although the world has gotten back to what I think, especially with people going to games and attendance for all leagues. You know, I said once in a meeting, you know, when the Jets were playing and we had a unfortunately, horrendous year on the field during COVID. But I said, when you were at home and we were losing a game, you just grabbed your remote and you put on another channel. And that was people spending 6-7 hours a day with us to be at the stadium to watch games. So it gave people optionality. And so we as leaders of an organization or whatever have to stay ahead of that, because the fans are always going to consume us, but we got to figure out how they're going to consume us and how they're going to stay, have that fan affinity, no matter what. So it's going to be interesting what happens on that space.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And so then the last thing I do this with every guest is ask them, because we hit so many topics in our conversation here, and you've got people around the country who are tuning in for this. So if there's anything that you, one or two things that you want to make sure that people have as takeaways from our time together, what would that be?
You know, look, we've talked about getting into your career, and it doesn't matter, sports or whatever, but and it's probably me just getting a little bit older in life and seeing my kids get older, but it just all does go quick. It goes very, very quick. So whether you're in sports or whatever, you got to make sure you take a step back and enjoy the journey and just make sure you're taking that journey with good people, people you could trust. But again, I can't say enough, this world it goes too quick. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm getting an age where you're getting some calls where people are starting to, God forbid, pass away, and you're getting there. And, you know, so not to end on a sour note, but, you know, like I said, I can't think of it enough. And that's one thing I've been doing personally the last couple of years, because, you know, it's a crazy world. And again, we look at COVID. No one, you know, I remember sitting there going, what's this COVID thing everyone's talking about? And all of a sudden, the whole world just stopped. I remember my boss at the Jets called me. I was downstairs. He goes, can you pop up? And he said to me, we're going to shut the office down for 2 weeks. I literally laughed and I'm like, come on, 2 weeks? And he just kind of gave me like, I think. And I started coming back, but we literally didn't see the general employee for 14 months. So it's, so you never know. And just enjoy the time, you know, with your family and loved ones. And, you know, you just got to take it in when you can. We all want to work hard and do great things in our career, but you got to figure out, you know, who to do it with, how to do it with, and make sure, again, at the end of the day, you surround yourself with some great people.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And you are too. And I can't thank you enough for the impact that you've had on my life and on so many others. So thank you for your time today and all you're doing, Freddie.
And Sean, it was so great seeing you. As I said, I haven't seen you in live in a room in 15 years. And I think it felt like we were back at 390 Murray Hill Parkway. So
absolutely.
So it's always great seeing you, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much. All right, everybody, have a great day.